This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu. Whether packing for a destination vacation or planning a staycation, Macy's has everything you need. Summer's almost here, and I'm so excited to take a trip with Bryn. We are planning it right now. We are heading to Macy's before we pack to grab new shoes we can wear all day with anything. I'm excited to lay in the sun with key pieces from Macy's, like my new Dolce Vita sandals and Levi's skirt. I am ready to relax and look and feel amazing. Oh, how good that sounds. Of course, I can't forget a new beach bag. I have been eyeing the collection of beach bags from Macy's, and I can't wait for you to see what I choose. Shop at Macy's.com/ownyourstyle.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
The virus that causes shingles is sleeping in 99% of people over 50. It's lying dormant, waiting, and it could reactivate at any time. And while not everyone at risk will develop shingles, it strikes as a painful, blistering rash that can last for weeks. Think you're not at risk for shingles? It's time to wake up, because shingles could wake up in you. If you're over 50, talk to your doctor or pharmacist about shingles prevention.
My guest today is model and author Paulina Porizkova. Paulina has had a fascinating, monumental career. At one point, the world saw her as a model who married a rock star. But she is so much more than that. In this conversation, we talk about the pressure to keep looking young as we age, what it means to be a model in current culture, and Paulina's experience processing feelings of grief and betrayal after her husband, Cars frontman Eric Ocasek, died. I found this conversation incredible, so real, so inspiring, so honest. I can't wait for you to hear it. Well, I was walking around my kitchen last night and I was thinking, I'm interviewing Paulina tomorrow. And it's funny because I didn't have any level of, you know, success, societal success until my late 30s. And there was such a long time of you being so, so mega famous and iconic in my life that sometimes I say, I can't believe I'm interviewing Paulina tomorrow, like the Paulina. And who am I? And it's just weird that now we're sort of peers in this media entertainment industry. And sometimes I just shake my head at the craziness of all of it, how people are like cars in traffic weaving in and out. And here we are together today.
Yeah, right. It's crazy what life throws at you, right? And you can never see around the bend. Like, you don't know what's next.
Well, right. And models, you know, I grew up in the era of like the supermodel, like at the peak era of the supermodel and glamazons. And, you know, you weren't a person, obviously. You were not a person. You were just this alien beauty figure that like came down to speak to mere mortals and marry, you know, a rock star, but not, you know, at the superficial attractive level that you were at. So that was like your first mortal, normal human moment in my non having Instagram, Twitter, or anything. So now you're a person. Like, I've seen that you're actually a human being. I've seen you post real stuff, get emotional, really share. And like, you're a flawed human being. So that's crazy for some of us to realize now.
Well, I'm kind of, thank you, I guess. yeah, you know what? It's the celebrity illusion. You know,
right.
in my book, I have an essay about celebrity and about like my take on celebrity is like when you become a celebrity, it's kind of like you're enclosed in this soap bubble with a reflective surface. And so when people look at you, the first thing they see is themselves, you know, the reflection of themselves. So their own assumptions about who you are. And so as a people always think, well, celebrities, you know, when you're a celebrity, everybody knows you. But in fact, it's exactly the opposite. When you're a celebrity, nobody knows you.
Right.
And nobody can possibly know you because they can't get past their own assumptions about who you are. So, yeah, I was a paper doll for my entire life. Does that mean that I actually was a paper doll? No.
Right.
But, you know, it took, I think it actually took tragedy to humanize me. I think, oddly enough, that's, you know, I think that's where people kind of got the memo like, oh, maybe her life is not quite as enchanted and as amazing as it seems. And the fact that I shared.
I think it was Rosie O'Donnell who said something about when you achieve fame and celebrity status, you don't change, but everybody around you does.
Yeah.
So, you know, it becomes, right. I mean.
Well, see, you have a great point of view here because you, as you say yourself, you didn't kind of become a celebrity until you were actually a woman so that you perceived it in a different way than I, who, you know, was a famous child. You know, so it's like I've grown up in that world and
I didn't,
when you grow up with it, you just think that that's the world. You don't really necessarily, you know, you can't.
That's interesting. Well, that's really interesting because I will tell you that my personality has changed as a result of it. Now, I'm not J-Lo. I'm not like people aren't standing outside my window with cameras. And I'm very, very introverted, which people are shocked by. I really never go out ever unless I have to. But I used to be someone who would talk to people in restaurants, I think, or just, you know, talk to random people, not all the time. And I didn't want to stay in the conversation for super long, but I would go to Starbucks in my pajamas with pimple medicine on my face. I've never really been overly vain. But you find that your body language changes a little if you're going to be out and people are going to just, oh, like, oh God, I forgot we're out and we're at a mall. And that means that people are going to see me and know that they know me and that we're going into that now.
Yeah.
So you do change a little bit because you're just like a little bit on guard and your posture is a little bit crouched because you're just like, wait a second, you know? So you have developed that personality from the beginning and who knows how that would have been different or unpeeled it now.
Interestingly, I think it worked a little differently for me because I never knew anything else. I mean, you know, I was kind of famous as a political refugee initially when I was a child. And then
that was a public thing for you personally? Like you were known for
when I arrived in Sweden at the age of 9 after this protracted lengthy thing of my parents trying to get me out of Czechoslovakia. I arrived into Sweden at 9 and I was like, do you remember that kid, Elian Gonzalez, the Cuban refugee?
Yes. Yes. Well,
I was that in Sweden.
Oh.
So I was like the face of, you know,
this crisis.
Cold War and, you know, poor political refugee. And that doesn't make you like super popular in school. So I kind of that, you know, dragged along with me through my teen years, not a great time to be known as a political refugee.
Wow. Because I was going to ask you about the bullying and that was a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of, you know, at least as far as I knew, that was what the bullying was based on because I was always called, you know, dirty communist and go back to your country and, you know.
Oh, wow. Really intense bullying. Like
oh,
hate
yeah.
speech.
Intense. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I had my head shoved into a toilet and the water flushed because I was told I was dirty. And
that never leaves you. That's childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Wow.
Plenty of that.
What were you thinking? Were you particularly glued to the television with the situation in Ukraine?
Yeah. I had actually traveled to Israel at that point to attend my godson's wedding. And I was in the middle of writing my book. Now, I was on a super time crunch because I had to finish my book in 3 months. That's a very short amount of time to write a book. So I wrote literally every single day, Saturday, Sunday, all holidays. but I had to go to my godson's wedding. It's like one of those life, right, you know, once in a lifetime things. So I went to Israel. I was completely jet lagged. I was sitting in my hotel room writing. And when I woke up in the morning, that was the headlines that I saw. And I just felt like I crumbled, you know. And then this essay just kind of flew out of me about occupation, about what it feels like to be occupied by, you know, on a country level and also on an emotional level, you know, occupation of the soul. And what's really, truly dangerous about occupation is not, you know, not that you can't get the jean jacket that you want or that you can't listen to the kind of music that you want, but it's that your soul is occupied. You know, you're scared of everything. Like you put into this little shape that you have to kind of fit within. And that's kind of like fame too, to a certain extent. You know, it's like being put in a box. And part of you almost goes, well, I'm safe as long as I stay in the box. Cause I don't really know what's outside of it.
Interesting. I also think about the fact that you were 9, because I just recently went to an event for the National Holocaust Museum and survivors spoke. And to be at an age that you definitely really remember, process, and feel, like, that's a very interesting age. I feel like the first time my daughter was a person that we made decisions together about where we were going or what we were doing was, you know, probably 8, 7, 8. So you now have opinions and, you know, you're confused. You're in between being two people, a total child with no opinion and, you know, a very, very overly decisive tween. So I just think that the age of that is very, is compelling. And I am very involved in Ukraine relief. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. And thank you. I follow you on IG too, and I see all the stuff that you do, and I just think it's so amazing.
Well, I appreciate that.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. Love this. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Imagine the feeling of pulsing electric shocks. Sounds like a nightmare, right? While individual experiences may vary, it's how some people describe shingles. This painful blistering rash could interrupt your life for weeks. It could even force you to cancel social events or weekend plans. Over 99% of adults 50 years or older already carry the virus that causes shingles. 1 in 3 people will get it in their lifetime. Why wait? Ask your doctor or pharmacist about shingles today.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So it's funny, we're talking about fame and we're talking about beauty. And I, for some reason, when I was reading about you, I was thinking about Victoria's Secret and Sports Illustrated and the changes in body type and in ethnicity and all of these different things. And it's, I'll be totally honest, because sometimes it feels like beauty and being a model and that whole world of imagery is in an identity crisis. Because when I was growing up, you heard that a model had to be 5'7", and that was the Kate Moss exception. You know, you had to be 5'7". You had to weigh a certain amount because you had to be sort of like a hanger for clothes. You know, you were just like a canvas for clothes. And even the look, you know, you weren't going in there with big extensions and glam. You had to be natural and be like a blank canvas. That's the way that I saw it or read about it in the magazines. And now, and, you know, I've talked to different men that think Sports Illustrated was just, it was stunning alien-like women in bathing suits. And now they feel that it's not like that because publications have to make sure to check all of these boxes. And I think about, models were never supposed to be like everybody else. They weren't supposed to look like everybody else. They were supposed to be these glamazons. It doesn't, you know, LeBron James does not play sports like everybody else. That's why he's LeBron James. Like, that's why you're you. That's why Cindy Crawford. It doesn't mean that anyone should love you more or hate you more for it. It's just what it is. Like, you just had to, you just were born stunning. So that's why you were a model. And Michael Jordan was born with a gift, or Picasso was born. So everything doesn't need to be that everybody's gets the same exact opportunities in everything.
I'm going to disagree with you in a like halfways.
I just want to hear. I'm curious because this is what the thoughts that I have that I'm not allowed to say inside, but I'm saying them.
Well, that's because it's you. And thank you for just, you know, saying what's on your mind, unfiltered. Right.
Yeah.
So first of all, models. Yes, I know, like, of what you speak. And that was kind of like, you know, my generation, you know, Christie Brinkley, Cheryl Teagues before me, and like, you know, the supermodels after me. So, yes, we were supposed to, first of all, the reason you had to be tall and a very specific size is because designers make a sample of clothing, one sample, and all the girls that will photograph it in magazines have to fit that one sample.
That's what I understood.
So that's why we all had to be the same size, right?
Right.
So that size was not an option because you had to fit that one outfit. And that was it. Obviously, younger skin, I was told, reflects light much better than older skin, and hence all the, you know, 16, 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And so like size.
And by the way, but that's why a basketball player, they should be tall. Like, we're not mad at them for that sport because they should be tall. It's okay. We're not like, oh, why don't you have short people playing NBA? It's just what it is. So go ahead.
See that, but that's what the fashion business was in the 70s and the 80s. Now, mind you, before that, in the 40s and 50s, I believe a lot of the fashion models were actually socialites. So they were older, they were slightly older women. They were women in their, you know, late 20s and 30s, occasionally even 40s. And it was like elegant women modeling, like the kind of things that they would wear. So it was like
that W magazine look of all those wealthy New York. Yeah. Okay, got it. Yeah. Got it.
So it was, so it's changed, you know, it's been changed throughout the years of like the way of showing you fashion or the way of selling you fashion. And of course, now we have more fashion than ever to sell. And we have like beauty products up the butt to sell. So, you know, there's more and more and more information. But I think, I also think that while we were clothes hangers, and that's all fine and well to show you, you know, the magnificent creations of like, you know, Yves Saint Laurent or whatever. It also, we also didn't represent very many women. We only, you know, we were clothes hangers, and it, and I think while we were supposed to really only show you the fashion and make the fashion look attractive, you know, little girls open the fashion magazines and then sort of get the idea that this is what they're supposed to look like.
That so, I do go with you on. That I understand. That's where the interesting line is, though. But not every little boy looks at a professional athlete thinking that that's how good they're supposed to be. It's okay that you grew up prettier than I am and taller than I am. I am a good marketer, whatever it is. Like, everybody's not exactly the same. And what with pertaining to color of your skin, 100%, like all ethnicities should be included. I'm just saying, are some people allowed to be more attractive than others now? Has that been canceled?
Well, see, that's...
Or what is attractive?
Well,
like,
I think that that's what we're battling with now, is what is attractive. Because quite frankly, Bethany, if you took this same face and this 5'11" body and stuck me back a century, I would have been washing dishes somewhere, because I sure as hell wouldn't have cut it as a required beauty.
You really think, is that really true? Like, isn't some beauty doesn't some beauty just stand the test of time? I don't know. I'm looking at you I don't know.
Square face and the high cheekbones, that was seen kind of like,
so it's trendy
thing.
It's a trend type thing.
Well, beauty, our perception of what is beautiful does change with time, right?
Okay.
Admittedly, throughout the century.
I like that. Good. We have had
different views of what beauty was, and it's usually sort of based around, I guess, you know, the economy and, you know, sort of like what's going on within the society. So it's like, you know, really plump, juicy women were seen as the sexual ideals for hundreds of years, because that promoted money and wealth and
indulgence,
you know, and good health.
Yes.
Fertility.
Yes. You know,
and then it wasn't until the 1920s when being really thin suddenly was a thing.
What you're saying to me makes perfect sense. You said, I keep going back to you saying that it was designed, because you're moving product. You're moving the clothes. You're moving the beauty. So being a blank canvas, being a hanger, being whatever you say. So now I think it boils down to marketing. And now it all boils down to marketing. So now whatever's going to sell.
It's whatever you personally, Bethany, feel like buying. Whatever I, Paulina, feel like buying. That is what's going to be pushed as the, I guess, object of beauty.
Yeah, and it's starting at the top with the media and the magazines and the designers, so they can shift. So I'm disagreeing with myself, because they can shift. It's still just marketing something different. So it doesn't, just because a size 14 is now more sexy than a size 0, it's still marketing that. It's just marketing whatever. It's always going to be an ebb and flow. Yeah. So I just,
While we're talking about that, you know, and body inclusivity, as we're saying, has, you know, flourished, and color inclusivity, fantastic. I'm all for all inclusivity, because I do think that, I think as a woman, we are told so early on that the way we look is of utmost importance. Even if your parents tell you, you know, you're great, you're fantastic, you're beautiful the way you are, don't listen to what anybody else tells you. You live in a society and you get this input thrown at you all the time that says the way you look matters. There is something.
Yeah, and why is it okay for, it's not okay for someone to talk about someone's weight if it's heavy, but it is okay to talk about someone's weight if they're thin. Like, there are double standards. And then some people will say that it's great to celebrate all sizes, all shapes, but not to be promoting unhealthy eating habits. And the pendulum has sometimes swung because everyone's mad at anyone for being thin. And I have a brand called Skinny Girl. So believe me, I know it.
Sure. And we've always we made the connection, in the olden days, being plump was healthy. And then mm-hmm. it became skinny was healthy. And frankly, you really can't tell by looking at a person whether they're healthy or not. It's not the body size that determines health.
That's true too.
Yeah.
So has it been incredible pressure being on lists, being the top 10 most beautiful, the top 10, you know, or just being a supermodel? Is it pressure because then you're out at the supermarket and if you think you don't look good, someone's looking at you and they're seeing the emperor has no clothes? Or what is that pressure like? Or do you not care?
I was also never very vain.
Nice.
And I come from a background where I was told I was ugly until I was 15 years old. I lived in Sweden. I wasn't even in high school. I was in middle school. And I was constantly told that I was ugly. In one week, I go to Paris. I wake up and all of a sudden I'm told I'm beautiful. I look at myself in the mirror and I go, well, I'm looking at exactly the same features.
Wow.
So a week ago I was ugly and the same exact face is now beautiful. So
you're saying what we just said. It's marketing.
Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Right.
It's not about me. It's about other people's perception of me. And I already sort of knew that. So I was the girl that arrived at bookings with my really thick glasses and a classic book. And that was the kind of a model I was. I wasn't really into the high fashion world of it at all. It was like it was a job and I was very grateful that I could do it and make the money that I made. But I honestly don't give a crap about fashion.
Well, by the way, it's funny because I'm not vain either. I saw a lot of you, of myself and your story. I'm not particularly vain. I don't really care. I like dressing nicely and I like having a nice outfit to go to something, but I don't care about quote unquote fashion. Are you a good business person? Have you been good at the business of the business?
I suck at business. Unlike you, Bethany, I suck at numbers and business. And it's just, I'm all about, you know, writing and figuring out people's emotional backgrounds. And like, this is like, that's all the sort of interconnectedness between emotions, between people that interests me, and money does not. And it never
right.
did.
But you definitely have made some mistakes in that case. With this,
I sure as hell have. I made some very obvious mistakes, and I paid for it. You know, it
was colossal or just the cost of doing business.
I met my husband when I was 19, and we were married for 30 years. We were together for 35.
Wow.
33. 2 years we were separated, but still lived together. And then when he died, he left behind a will that said that I was not eligible to any of the money of our estate because I had abandoned him, which was a patent lie. But I found myself after 30 some years of living with this man that I trusted with my life, suddenly waking up and he was dead and I couldn't ask him what was going on. And also like no cash. Like I was like, I did it because we were still married. I did get these two houses that we owned, but heavily mortgaged, and I had no money to pay for anything.
Oh.
And then COVID. So, you know.
Wow. But like, I don't even know how someone, you know, many kids get married without prenups that are married for 30 years. And that's a horror story you're telling. Like that, it's very common for someone to be dumb and not sign a prenup, you know, yeah. you know, in the 30s, whatever. But at 19 years old, no one's going to blame you for not knowing what a prenup even was. And like you, but along the way, you never like asked, are we good? Am I good? What's the will? Like, you know.
No, it never occurred to me because this is the man that I spent my whole life.
Oh.
I loved him, and I thought that he loved me the same. I thought we were getting a divorce because our marriage was not working.
But you had a pretty good run, it sounds like.
We had a really freaking good run. And we share, I mean, you know, it's like I spend my whole life with this guy. So I trusted him wholeheartedly.
So oh this my was, God. It's really like this. You just were like trying to mourn and hate at the same time. Probably.
Yeah, it was not a good time. But it was obviously the darkest time of my life. But
isn't that funny, though? It's funny that you say that because I had I was married 2 years. It was a 10-year to get divorced on a 2-year marriage. 10-year. And I mean, probably over $5 million in legal. Like, it was gnarly. It was not a garden variety divorce. I mean, it was insane.
God.
Yeah. Brutal battle. I mean, court appeals. It was endless. And it was, I had a very, very challenging childhood. I've seen everything from abuse to hospitalization to attempts at suicide in front of me. I've seen it all. Nothing compared to this situation I'm telling you about as an adult. So I can identify with you probably the walls closing in, the frustration of having no control over the situation and not being able to get the answers you want and you'll never get them. And then having to say to yourself every day is like just moving closer to healing. Probably I used to think of it like golf. Okay, I'm at the first hole now. Hopefully I'll get to the second. And then I'd get pulled back to the first hole. And
yep.
I don't know what hole are you at now? Yeah. In everything, in grieving and pain and anguish and confusion and frustration, all of that. What hole in the golf game are you?
Ha. Huh. Well, see, my metaphor for this is, I like your golf course. I wish I had thought of it. My metaphor was being pushed into the ocean at night in the dark with a storm. And just trying to stay afloat. Like, you have no idea what direction to go in. There is no light. You don't know what happened.
You're not trying to win. You're trying to survive.
You are literally just in survival mode for a really long time.
What's long? How long?
I would say, well, it's been 3 years now. And I think I've gotten, you know, I'm like healing in certain aspects of it. So I am... I'm sort of okay with the betrayal part now of the will thing, because the money thing got sorted out, his estate settled. I got what was due to me under New York law, which is a third, not a half, mind you. I did put all my money into our joint bank accounts, and I got a third.
Oh, wow. All your modeling money was in the pot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It all went into the same pocket.
Wow.
But you know what? I got some. So, and I'm okay, and I'm working again. So,
So you got over the betrayal, but
The betrayal. The grief is kind of like a thing that surges up, you know, like you think you're okay, and then it just kind of grabs you and pulls you under for a while.
Grieving the death, not grieving the betrayal, grieving the actual loss.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, again, I spend my whole life with this man.
I know. It'd be hard, though, to imagine. Like, the anger probably was a pretty good grief help, because you're not, you know, you would have been, think about how different your grief would have been if you didn't have the anger. I'm just curious about that. Because I, you know, there are people whose husbands leave them with all these bills and kill themselves. And then they're like grieving because the person was in so much pain, but they've left them with this garbage dump. So it's got to be this mixed up crazy thing that many people listening can probably relate to, sadly.
I actually think that I was a little resentful that I didn't just get to mourn him, because I just, after a while, I was so angry. And when I wasn't angry, I was so sad. And when I wasn't sad, I was angry. It's like, there was no moment
exit.
where like one thing wasn't hurting.
You couldn't get out. Wow. And so if it was a marathon or if it was a golf game, how much out are you now?
I don't know, Bethany. I have no idea. I'm 3 years into it, and I can say that, look, I feel like I have a purpose in my life now. I sort of know what I'm doing. You know, I've written a book. I am promoting the book. I have my sweet little apartment. It's a rental, but, you know, it's my own apartment.
Where is it?
It's in Manhattan.
Oh, great. Okay.
See this beautifully wallpapered wall?
I keep looking at it. I'm obsessed with it.
It's really cool. It's stick and peel wallpapers, because it's a rental, so I couldn't really wallpaper
it. I love it.
But on the other side of the wall is the very first apartment I rented when I came to United States when I was 17 years old.
My God, what?
How's that for a karmic circle?
That's meaningful. That's beautiful. So yeah, you're living, well, you're an empty nester, right? Your kids are grown. Yeah,
my kids are out. It's just me. And I am.
What a full circle. Wow. Okay. So I would love this to be 3 hours. All right. I have so much to ask you. Wait, so your kids are grown, and how is your relationship with them as it pertains to this thing you've just discussed? I'm sure you have to compartmentalize a lot. You're not going to drag them into everything, but they're adults. So how is the whole dynamic with your kids as it pertains to this?
My children are freaking amazing. I am so proud of these two men that we've raised, and that's me and my husband both. He was instrumental in them becoming who they are, and they are gentle and they're kind and they're understanding. And you know, when I was writing my book, all of this stuff is in my book. I didn't spare myself any. I'm keeping other people's secrets, but I am purging mine. And so I ran the book by them before publishing, to make sure that they were okay with everything I said. And there were a couple of things that they said, "Mom, please take this out. This is not, I don't want this in there." But, so of course I did. But then I had their full blessings on, "Yep, this is how you see it. This is what happened. You just, okay, you know, go ahead, Mom, go, Mom." And they're super supportive. And for them to be super supportive of their mother, who does tell the truth about what happened, is pretty extraordinary, because they adore their father. I mean, he was like the greatest dad in the world to them.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good that you compartmentalize that and allow them to have that without tarnishing that completely. So I remember, obviously, I've always known who you are, but really you kind of piquing my interest during the pandemic when you were really sharing. And I mean, did you like really share? I don't remember what the post was, but you were really having a hard day and you were posting yourself the way that you look. And it was raw, to say the least. And it seems like that's this next chapter, which is connected to this book entirely. I can't wait for you to tell me when you've come out of it, because there will be a moment where you're out. Like, I'm out. And it took a long time. It took a decade. Well, it was a decade till the thing was closed. So,
yes, but emotionally, how long did it take you?
Well, no, I mean, I couldn't even start the emotional process of healing until I felt that there was a button on it and everything. The money was closed. The custody was closed. The full custody was closed. Like, all of that was closed. So I would say, realistically, maybe a couple of years, I don't think you're that far from feeling like, maybe after this book does well, like, there'll be a moment where you'll just feel like, wow, like, this button has been snapped and now I'm really like feeling lighter. It's just, there'll be an aha moment, and it definitely hasn't happened yet because you know it. And just the pandemic saved my life because it brought everything to the surface that had happened for all these years. And it's when I got full custody, and it's when, you know, everything was just done and settled. There were no more things to discuss. So whenever that is for you, and I'm sure there's a couple of little things that haven't been finished, that will be like, wow. And it will clear.
I think it's all clear for me now. I think it's been clear for me for probably about a year now. So whatever, you know, I mean, look, I fell in love with my husband when I was 19, and I found myself single when my husband and I separated, which was before his death. I fell very much in love with somebody, and he left me the day I was selling my house during the pandemic. So that was a little added.
That's the Aaron Sorkin of it all?
No, God, no. Aaron
got
himself in a mess by being my public boyfriend. No, Aaron was my vacation from heartbreak. Bless him.
Oh.
Yeah. No, he was my little vacation, and I adore him for it. No, it was a different man, but unnamed man.
Got it. I don't care at all. I didn't know, because he has been public with you, so I didn't know.
This guy was not for any particular reasons, but just it was everybody around me knew, and my husband knew, and the kids knew, and it's like, you know, I was not sharing that with the world because it didn't belong out there. It wasn't anybody's business at that point. But so I was kind of dealing with the grief and the betrayal, and then heartbreak as well. And then COVID. So when you saw me sharing, when I came on your radar, was when I was literally drowning. I was at, you know, I'd say suicidal, but, you know, it sounds so like.
No, and COVID crystallized everything because you're alone with your own thoughts in your head and you know, you can't release.
And I had never really been alone. In my home.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think. Wow. Yeah. No, a lot of people are like experiencing health problems now as a result of, you know, over consuming during COVID. I mean, it was for some people, you know, it either helped them entirely or destroyed them. So I could see. So you basically were what could be perceived in other worlds or other times as oversharing, but you literally needed to connect to people.
Exactly, because I was going to die.
Wow.
I mean, there's no other way to put it. I was drowning and I was sending out little messages in the bottle saying, please, somebody, is anybody out there?
Did people help you?
And yes. And that's the, to me, the miracle and that there were other souls. Well, there were other souls that connected to me and how much that it did keep me afloat.
Amazing.
And then I kept other ones afloat. There was like, you know, these people started sort of coming to me because of me sharing my vulnerability. And then they Amazing. Started sharing their vulnerabilities with me. And when you just know that there's somebody out there that hears you, even just that little bit, makes you make it to the next day.
That's, you know, really special and a gift, and kind of full circle with your book coming out too. So, you know, you're on this sharing, connecting, rebuilding journey, being by yourself in your apartment. You know, I did see myself in you, in that it feels like you were alone. You weren't alone in your adult life, but it feels like in your child life, you were alone a lot. You kind of, did you raise yourself?
Well, yes, I raised myself, but I also raised my little brother. So I was not so much alone. I was lonely, but I wasn't alone. I had this 3-year-old that I had to take care of for, you know, my whole childhood.
Which does make a difference. That's like such a connection. Like being a single mom, you just feel that connection to your child. And that was your, so I get that. That's not being alone.
No. And then I met my husband at 19 and he already had 4 kids. So, you know, I feel like my whole life was spent being needed by somebody else. And now I'm learning how to not be needed by anybody. And you know what? I don't love it.
Oh, well, you know, I'm thinking about the child support issue with your father coming full circle with this issue with Rick, which I had the same exact child support issue as a kid. The stories told to me were just that my father, we hadn't seen him since he was 5 and he never paid child support. He was this big famous horse trainer. And my relationship was very challenging also with my mother. So I'm relating to you there. But then to come later and have someone want to take your money that when you were broke and never earned any, for me, that was full circle also. Just like that's not an accident. Like those things are just interesting. You had that in your story. It's literally in your bio about your father. And then you come into the situation with someone you're supposed to trust years later. It's like leaving another mark.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a little bit like life, like whatever fates, whatever higher powers, if there are any, it's like you are here to learn this lesson and, mm-hmm. You need to keep having obstacles thrown in the way to learn it, because you're not going to learn just by coasting through life, right? So here's another obstacle for you. Let's see how you'll deal with this one.
Well, Ellen always said you'll keep making the same mistake. Ellen DeGeneres, you keep making the same mistake until you learn the lesson, she said to me. She said a couple of things that jump off the page in my whole life. It's interesting. But she said that to me. And also, it kind of feels like it created this new journey for you. I mean, without what happened with Rick and your dad, but certainly what happened with Rick, you wouldn't be sharing in this way and writing this book in this way. And that's what I was going to say about the golf, was that I was thinking, I know there's a reason for all this, this pain, this mental pain, this graze, these hair falling out, this stress. There's something about this. It will not feel like this forever. I will be able to pay this forward and help other people in their situations and their divorces. And I feel like that's what's happening for you. Just seems very poetic.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and I also think, like, for most of my life, I have always had this like real desire to connect with people. Again, it kind of comes back to I'm not a great alone person. I mean, I'm fine, obviously, I can manage, but I really enjoy talking to people, connecting, asking them about their lives, sharing. That to me is like my joy in life.
Right.
And so, I was sort of prevented from being able to do that because my husband was exceedingly private and he kind of hated people, actually. He was not social at all. And so we were a very small, tightly knit family. And then my celebrity sort of prevented me. And that's the kind of celebrity I had for being a model.
Of course. You know? No, I mean, to be a model married to a rock star is not exactly relatable to the average person.
Yeah,
so it didn't make you vulnerable or relatable or connected. So to be jilted and alone as an empty nester and at your bottom when everyone thinks you have a perfect life, that's relatable.
Yeah. You know?
So here we are. That's really interesting, and it makes a lot of sense. And maybe it was a gift. Maybe the pandemic was a gift for you too.
It was one of those gifts that burns down your house.
Yes.
So you're not immediately grateful.
Exactly. I get it. Believe me. I still can't see my situation as a gift either. I get what you're saying, but it definitely was a new chapter starter.
Do you like where you are now better than at your happiest before all the things fell apart?
Well, my childhood was the racetrack and gambling and seeing alcohol and drugs and going to nightclubs at 13 years old and seeing crazy abuse and all kinds of nuts things, moving 13 times. But as an adult, I was a bit of an action junkie. And I'm just like, let's do that. Okay, there's a crisis in Ukraine. Okay, I can solve it. I can raise $50 million. Like, I get in all the way and can handle anything. So while I'm good for it, there's nothing I can't get done, it's not great for me. So at this stage in my life with my relationship, which is super solid, it's not as chaotic. So sometimes I have to realize that most people that are in solid, happy relationships with their kids and with their partners are hopefully at sort of a status quo, meaning it's not, you know, Paul and I aren't, you know, blowing lines of cocaine and going out to nightclubs on weekend. Like we are literally in bed at 9:30. I'm drinking a mocktail. Like, so sometimes my childhood action is going, wait, what are we, there's no problem. What are we doing? Like, you know, and gets activated by work. But I'm at the most happy and peaceful and feeling healthy and just like good every day and like this is great and in a positive attitude I've ever been in. But it's not like the crack when you first meet someone that's wrong for you and you're like, oh my God, you know, it's solid and peaceful and loving.
The thrill and the excitement. I think all of us that were raised in like in those ways and then went on to have some you know, public success, you get used to those hits of adrenaline.
Yes.
And so when you're without them, you go,
It's normal.
Yeah.
It's totally peaceful, loving, healthy, normal, fun, laughing, family. It's all that. It's just not me being in a nightclub at 13 years old and my mother telling me how to get a fake ID to get into, you know, the Palladium. With say to Howard, the guy at the door, act like you belong. You know, like it's not that. So
yeah.
We have to control that beast in our lives, that addiction in our lives to the action and the getting thing. Yeah, and we get that through work a little.
Yeah. Well, I got it. I didn't miss it because I mean, again, I was married for such a long time, and I was like, I was a mom, and I was you know, I have grandkids, step grandkids. I have my kids. I have like this big family and houses that I was taking care of, and taking care of my husband and taking care of everybody, and feeling, I guess I was validated by people needing me, you know, to take care of them.
Nice.
And so, yeah, but it sucks when, sucks now.
Well, now there'll be the next chapter, exactly, of that for sure.
And that's the part that I'm figuring out now, where I feel like I've done such a tremendous amount of growing in the last 3 years. Like, you know, like had your bones broken and regrown, like that, yes, kind of growing. And I think it's kind of made me taller, you know?
Do you want to be connected to someone again?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
You want to be in a relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of feel like being able to have a life in which you can share. I love sharing. I mean, sharing is, obviously I love sharing.
Oversharing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a good name for another book. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. You love sharing.
Yeah. And so, you know, having all these wonderful experiences, which I have been having, this year has been kind of a miraculous year. I've done so much travel and sort of back to work, and I'm getting my purpose, and you know, and I'm connecting to people in a whole different way than I was able to do earlier. So I'm really like my career life is just freaking awesome right now. I'm the happiest I've been with what I am able to do and where I'm doing it and who I am speaking to and all of that. But then I come at home, and for the first time in my life, I have nobody to share it with.
That's a better box to check before checking the relationship and then the career. So I would say at least you have the right first box checked, because you're going to come into whatever relationship with, this is what's going on, this is what I am, this is this foundation, and then that will be additive.
Sure. But also trying to, I mean, dating in New York when you're 57.
What's your approach?
Oh, I've done every approach there is in the book. I've gone on blind dates. I've gone on apps. I've gone on, you know, I've met people with my friends, you know, whatever.
So with online dating, you need to be at Barney's. You need to be at a select type of department store. You cannot be at Macy's, like at Walmart for this. You do not want to be on Amazon, because it's overwhelming and you get full and then you get distracted. But also you have to be a very discerning customer. You need to decide ahead of time, write down what exactly you want.
I've got my list. I know what my priorities are.
Okay.
And you know, they have changed radically in, you know, I think it's so funny, because I always thought, you know, funny, smart, sexy was like, you know, really important. And then I realized I left off probably the most important thing, which was physically and emotionally available.
Yes. And I'm sorry, you need someone successful, because otherwise it's an awkward pause in every vacation, at every dinner, in the room. You just do. You need someone that's a level of success.
Let me just say, I've had so much advice on like what sort of dating I should be doing. And people keep saying, date real guys. Date real guys that are just going to adore you and treasure you. And, you know, they don't have to be like the blah, blah, blah. So I've gone out on dates with real guys. They either talk about themselves endlessly to try to, you know, bolster their self, or they can't talk to me at all. So yeah, no, it's kind of doesn't work super well.
No, it doesn't mean you're a bad person, because you're not supposed to be dating someone that works at a drugstore. It means that you've accomplished a lot, and you need to be able to have an educated conversation with someone who is passionate and who has accomplished something and wants to accomplish more, because that's what you want to do. You're not going to respect someone who's sitting around on their ass. And I've been through it. And believe me, it's the one biggest challenge of me in any relationship, is someone not feeling like they have to prove something.
Yeah.
Because I have so much naturally going on every day that walks into this door. So someone else is going to be like, oh, I did this and this happened. And because no one feels, and then also financially, people are going to say, well, I mean, I'm not Aristotle Onassis, but so I know you're used to this, but, and you just don't need that kind of thing, because that gets worse. So you need to be at Barney's, not
Yes,
shopping
ma'am.
On Amazon.
Barney's.
Yeah.
Going to
okay.
Barney's.
So you need to be at Barney's, even though Barney's closed, but it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay. You need to be but, at the proverbial Barney's. So I'm going to leave you alone soon. It's like a stalking relationship now. What about plastic surgery? Have you had it? What do you think about it? Do you want it? Do you do it?
Yeah, plastic surgery. I'm always feeling like I'm sort of torn in half about like what do I want? What do I believe in? What do I find attractive in other people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know I don't have any fillers or any Botox, right? And that's a personal choice.
Never have.
No.
Wow.
I've done lasers. I'm all for like non-invasive promises that are going to restore my collagen to prepubescent. Not that it works really that well, but I've, I love doing that because that makes me feel like I'm not doing anything really, you know.
You look stunning and you look natural and you look like a woman. And I used to always think about the way Susan Sarandon used to look when I was young, and she looked like she was aging beautifully. And I just did the plastic surgery tour, just so you know. So I now am a semi expert on it because I've done it twice.
What do you mean tour?
So I will get Botox probably once or twice a year if I remember. Like, I'm also not vain. So if I just go like this and I'm like, oh, well, there's a lot of lines there, then maybe I'll do it. But I'm not religious about it. And I don't ever really look in my face. Except do I look rested? Like, I like that look of that freshness in the morning. And I always have some sort of a black circle, and even more so when I am rested, which is weird. But I one time had filler only because I had the Botox in my TMJ jaw that made it collapse. Over a course of time. And so someone said filler, and I didn't like it, and I didn't do it again. I'm not up on everything. I don't read articles on this, so I've never had any of those other, like the strings or any of the other stuff done. I've had peels. Okay. So one of my friends who's a very well-known celebrity said to me, and she's vain, and you're not and I'm not, so you got to split the difference. She said, you're late. Not meaning go do something, just as a part of a conversation. Oh yeah, everyone's lying. Everyone's done it. And you're late, and I'm 52. And you're 57. So she said, you're late, and everyone's done something, and they're all lying about it. I said, oh. And two of my friends have done individual things that actually bothered them. Now, I don't have a specific thing, like aging, I guess, would be a thing that could bother us, or the black circles. But like, I don't have a specific thing like the neck or whatever, just that line over when you smile. Now it's gotten longer. That's annoying in pictures. And I look back now, and I had that 10 years ago, by the way. So this isn't like I just never saw it. I look in pictures. I just saw something yesterday on my Wikipedia. It was an old picture. I'm like, wait, I keep thinking that's an old thing. I've had that for years. So they had gone, and I went on to meet the people who said the thing, the guys, the different doctors. And what they do say, they all say, is if you are going to do something, like if you do think you're going to do something, and if you're not, then great. Because I know people who haven't, like you, and you look amazing. You could run the whole thing, I could probably tell. You could let it ride. But if you have decided that you're going to do something, they say between 48 and like 52, 53, the way that your face chronologically, the age that your face chronologically looks. And they said 48 for me. But that between 48 and 53 is an optimal time to do it, because if you're into your, you know, 60s, there's more to do. And then because there's more that's come down, so then there's more likelihood of a more dramatic look and change.
Right.
And also that if you do it in your 50s, it lasts longer. Like, it will last 15 years, but if you do it in your 60s, it lasts half that time. So it becomes more of a logical thing, not like me looking in my face today, but am I eventually, teeth too, same with the teeth. Are we getting on this road? If all the doctors are saying you're getting on this road because of erosion or TMJ, when are we getting on? Like, that's the thing. So if a person, not you, Paulina, but I'm sure you have an opinion, if a person does think that they probably will get on that road, then when are they entering into this journey? And with how much? That's what I liked about the tour, was that it became not about, I don't like the way I look. It became about a logical decision. So I liked that about it.
Okay, I can see that. I sort of have a slightly different view on it, though.
Good, let's hear it.
Well, again, so here's my question to you. Are you happy with the way you look right now? Like, do you think you are a good you, a good version of you right now?
I am. But I don't want to be 62 and then I should have entered early. That's the thing. Yeah. So that's the conversation. What you're saying. Yes, I do right now. Like the way that I mean, with the, you know, I'm aging. I'm a person. It's normal.
That's the thing. And like, my question is like, why do we need to fix our faces as if they were broken with age? Are they really broken because you're aging? I mean, look at me. I've got lots of wrinkles. I'm getting slightly jowly, which I don't love. The jowls and the turkey.
Okay, that's what one of my friends had, a real problem with the jowls, and it kept getting worse. And then the neck thing.
Yeah.
So she looks like she did nothing.
I like this. I like the tendons. I think they're cool. I think they look strong. So those I'm embracing those. I think and I like them in other women too. But I don't like the skin that hangs off that makes you look like you're melting. Okay. That I'm not like super into, but I like my wrinkles. I like the life I've lived that's imprinted on my face, and I don't want to take that away.
I love that. And so so the jowly things will not, but if they were really bothering you, like my friend, they didn't bother until, and she's gotten older, until they really bothered her. And then she only did that one thing.
Exactly.
Because it bothered her, and you cannot tell she had anything done. Like, this is not clown life.
And that
zero.
To me is like, that is what, if I have something done, it will be because one thing bothers me a lot, and I will want to just smooth it out so it doesn't bother me anymore. But
right.
I still want to inhabit the same age and the same face. And you know, we are going to get older. There's no around it. Do I want to look like, I do not want to look like I'm 39 because it's impossible and I'm going to look weird. And I want to be, you know, this is like my tagline on Instagram that I do a lot of hashtag between mm-hmm. J-Lo and Betty White. It's exactly because of this, because we are used, and this is this representation. Remember what we were talking about?
Yes.
It's about representation. How much representation are there of women who are 57 who look like I do? That have a fully, you know, that have a wrinkled face that's fully movable and that, you know, hasn't had any alterations to it. There's not very many of us. So
well,
I'm not very well represented.
We agree. Okay, so we do agree because I am not vain. And any reason, it's like sort of like, I don't like when there's a little tiny hole on my shirt or a stain, but I don't mind if it's an old shirt. That's
yeah.
So I'm saying,
yeah.
If that line, it just annoys me. It doesn't have to do with being 99 or 29. It's
yeah.
just a thing. Or if
yeah,
a chip
and
a tooth, I could feel it. It drives me nuts, a chip and a tooth, like in the
yeah.
back. No,
but it's not age related. It's like
not at
it's
all.
Something.
So we agree more than yeah. you think because I don't want to look younger. I don't filter my pictures.
I love you for it.
Yeah,
you're somebody that doesn't filter.
I don't want to look younger. I want to look like I do. But if there's something like a gel or the hollow because I'm thin and because my jaw went, that's the conversation I'm having. And the doctor said there are people that come in here, they want the Beverly Hills look, they want the Palm Beach look, they want the this look, they want the that look, and good surgery is no look. And my friends that have had it done, you cannot tell. They're almost, one of them is almost annoyed because it's like she went in and you can't even tell because mm-hmm. she lives in one of those places where, you know, they look a little doll-like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want the doll-like look, go for yours. Do whatever
Absolutely.
You want.
Whatever
I love being my
good.
Age. I'm raising my hand. I'm 52. I love it. So, yes, we agree more than you know. It's
oh,
just,
no.
We
do, in fact, agree. But I'm sort of just, I'm like my, the thing that's like such a big part of this is that I feel as women, well, I mean, first of all, we're shamed for everything from the moment we grow up, right? We're like shamed for the way we look and the way we act, and we're too nice. We're not nice enough. We make too much money, too little money. You're not a good mother. You're too much of a hovering. I mean, everything. That's like just shame, 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 shame on you.
Right.
And looks are one of the things that, because it can put us ahead, and then it feels like it can hold you back. And so looks are so important to us women. And I mean, sure, do we wish that it wasn't so, but it's been like this for thousands of years. And is it going to go away next year? No.
For different people, looks do nothing for me in my career. Like they for you, they have been a currency. For me, it could almost be, if I filter myself and look hot and sexy and have big giant Medusa hair and a curvy little wig, like I will be trolled because it's such a sellout. Like looks are not part of what I have put forth in my career.
Sure, but you are all about being an authentic person. Like this is what draws me to you, is that I feel like you're telling me the truth every step of the way. So if you filtered your face, then you're lying over in this one specific area.
I agree. We agree. That's
from the authenticity, right? But I feel like there's not enough representation of older women. There's a hole between J-Lo, who is like your age and looks like she's 39 and totally like freaking amazing, and then Betty White, who was a snap, crackly, amazing, old broad, you know? And then it's like, then you get visible again because you're so adorable. You're so cute. Look, she's 90 and she's still like full of pep. But in between those two, there's no representation.
That's true. But by the way, that's what's interesting, because just like the runway and different people being on it, people are deciding to change. And they're, I agree with you. But if somebody wants to do something, as long as they're honest, that's where you get me. Like if I decide to get a new face, if I decide to get purple eyes, blue eyes, blonde hair, I'm just going to be honest about it.
Well, but please don't tell me it's yoga and water. Yeah.
No, I won't. And I don't. Yeah. But I will say that this is a stupid analogy, and then I'll leave you alone to your life and whoever's at the door. When I first started on Housewives, I was wearing a cable knit sweater, no makeup, doing my own makeup in these interviews, and just being totally real. If you went out to an event, you went to the Trish McAvoy counter, Bloomingdale's, got your makeup done. We didn't have glam squads, and you weren't putting a gown on before you just meet four people and a camera guy for cocktails. Like it wasn't, but that's what it's come to now. And in this industry, it's hard. I couldn't just go back in the end.
Yeah.
And be in my sweatpants. Like you look weird. Denise Richards walked into a scene with these people on Housewives and looked crazy because they were all wearing head to toe Gucci and vajazzled F's on their vagina. Like, so she had to up her game a little because otherwise it would be weird.
Yeah.
So we have to find that balance between upping our game a little and not representing a 50 something year old woman. I think that's the problem. You've got 9 out of 10 people doing something, and then you're sitting here alone, the only person who's not filtered. And you're like trying to explain, it's like wearing the pregnancy t-shirt. Like, I'm actually pregnant. I'm uploaded. You want to be like, hi, I'm not filtered, because I know you're looking left and right and everyone looks hot and I look like a wreck. But I just want you to know, yeah, I'm not filtered. And you want the extra cookie for it.
I have to do this all the time. Like now when I get booked for like the odd modeling shoot and it's in a different country and they want me to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, guys, I have a 57-year-old face with a 57-year-old reaction to travel, and then waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's going to look like crap until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, the first day. So like, be aware that that's what you're going to get.
Right.
And it's like, people don't listen, or they don't pay attention. And then you show up and they're all like,
oh, but
what are we going to do about those eye bags? What are we going to do about this? Oh, yeah, her eyes are really puffy. They're like, yeah, I mean, I told you, that's like, the maintenance is different when you're my age but again, I really want to normalize this. I want to normalize.
The truth is, I'm not kidding you, and I'm the most honest person, you know, I would tell you. True. You look amazing. I really would. And you've looked like a wreck in some of those Instagram pictures that you've posted, just like me. You look amazing. You happen to look amazing. I think because, you know, you were at like a Michelin star. Like you started at such a high level that what's deteriorated in you has gotten you down to being just like normally beautiful, not like alien crazy beautiful. That's what I think. I'm looking at you and I'm telling you right now, you're stunning and in a fresh and natural, beautiful. You look amazing. I think it's because you were starting at Hermes. So now you're maybe the affordable Hermes. You were like the rare Himalayan Birkin encrusted in diamonds. And now maybe you're just like, you know, a rare crocodile, you know, with palladium hardware. Like maybe you're not I think that's what the problem is. Like you started at such a high level that you just got knocked down on half a notch.
But I started at such a high level with zero self-awareness, with a rebellious attitude and smooth skin. And I wasn't freaking half the person that I am now, not even a quarter of the person that I am now. the level of patience and intelligence and insight and humor and everything else that I've got going on inside. I had none of that. And that's when I was in my prime. And I'm like, no, I'm in my prime now.
Yes.
This is what prime in this woman looks like. It looks like it's older.
I love it. I think it's amazing. I really do. And you had such hardship as a child, and then modeling came easy to you. And then you had another bump and had hardship after your marriage. You're on a roller coaster. That's beautiful. And I really like where you are now too. And I'm so happy to know you now. Like,
see?
You know, I'm going to get that wallpaper and put it somewhere just to remember you. And you're my favorite Hermes bag.
Kind of wrinkled. Yes. Just like in their mid-bag. Yeah.
No, I'm saying that's just, yeah. Anyway, you're wonderful inside and out is the most important. And I'm so happy to have met you again.
Thank you, Bethany, and ditto. And I love everything you do. It's like the honesty, the authenticity, and the putting out the good out into the world, you know?
Thank you.
That's, if we all could do a little bit more of that, the world would be a better place.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. Love this. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Imagine a sharp, stabbing pain on your skin. Sounds like a nightmare, right? While individual experiences may vary, it's how some people describe shingles. This painful blistering rash could interrupt your life for weeks. It could even force you to cancel social events or weekend plans. Over 99% of adults 50 years or older already carry the virus that causes shingles. 1 in 3 people will get it in their lifetime. Why wait? Ask your doctor or pharmacist about shingles today.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm ranting and raving in between all these podcasts and I don't get to talk to interesting people and hear their stories. And wow, Paulina and I had a great conversation. And I love when, you know, it's not just like a yes, everything you say is perfect and yes, everything I say is perfect. It's just an interesting conversation, a back and forth of two women in their 50s who've been through a lot of craziness. And I loved it. She's so interesting and really beautiful inside and out. What a wonderful conversation. I'm really better for that.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.